Okay. Thanks, Bruno, and appreciate also the opportunity to come to this really nice symposium, Tough Acts to Follow. Boy. My talk's going to be a little bit different in the sense that I think it certainly shares issues with crop and ecosystem modeling that the others have talked about, but a lot of the focus is kind of going to be on, you know, what are some of the issues when you're asked to take your models and to have them in some way inform policy? And so there's some different issues that have to do with kind of usability and other things that maybe are slightly different than the previous speakers. So I'd like to thank several people in my group, some of whom are named here: Mark Easter and Amy Swan, Kevin Brown, also Adam Chambers, who is at NRCS, USDA, and works a lot with us in our work with Comet. But also in this project, we did work in California, and Kerry Steenworth at USDA ARS, Davis, as well as Shaw Barker at UC Davis. And then there's lots of other people. I don't know, you know, when you're putting together your abstract for ASA, and you're usually doing it the last minute, and there's about 10 minutes before they shut down the system, and then you're going through and you're putting in your co-authors and you sort of want to add more, and at some point it's like, I don't have time to add everybody, I'd really like to. And so so there's a number of people here that are have really contributed a big part to this effort. So the context, I'm going to kind of draw it up to, you know, pretty big issues in terms of the context of what I'm going to be talking about. And one is we know that in general, you know, from this meeting and others, there's really a growing interest in soil health, and obviously that has to do with things like food security for the 9 billion people on the way, issues climate change adaptation. Just I think last year the Soil Health Institute was launched and is making a bigger presence, and I think on Wednesday here in Tampa the Farm Foundation for Ag Research is having a big meeting on soil health, and there's, you know, I'm sure there's several soil health symposia and talks at this. So it's now a big topic that's out there, and lots of people in just the general, you know, the general population are suddenly talking about soil health. And similarly, you know, there's a growing interest now in soils and land use and what we do on the landscape with respect to greenhouse gas mitigation, and particularly over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years on actually carbon dioxide removal. And so things like there was, at the end of the previous administration, there was this U.S. White House report on mid-century decarbonization. There's the 4 per mil plan. These are just examples. There's a lot of stuff going out there. And one of the things that is, you know, that is focusing this is, of course, looking at the projected future in terms of greenhouse gas emissions and climate change that come out of, for example, the fifth assessment, and basically saying that no matter how we, how rapidly we can shift our energy sources to renewables and reduce fossil fuel emissions, we're going to have to remove carbon dioxide actively from the atmosphere in order to sort of try to get as close as possible to, you know, the Paris type of objectives. And it turns out that all of a sudden people are looking at land use systems and saying, gee, you guys can take, you know, carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, can't you? Because we're looking at direct air capture, and yeah, we can do these things, and BECCS, you know, bioenergy and carbon sequestration and stuff like this, but it costs a lot, and so we're back in the picture. So for good or ill. So if we want to then have more influence, we want to shift changes in practices towards things that build soil health, towards carbon dioxide removal, if you will, those kind of things. You know, how do we implement those policies, and how do we incentivize farmers? And there's different ways, you know, that can be done with government programs, you know, carbon markets. There's a lot of interest now on the part of companies to, you know, to have more sustainable supply chains and low carbon footprint products, et cetera. So, of course, then for us as scientists, when we're met with this policy issue, is to say, probably the most important thing we can really provide is expertise and tools that will help quantify, because we know that if we're looking at things like soil carbon change and greenhouse gas emissions, as Peter and others have shown, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty there, and it's not something that we can have mass specs out on everybody's field measuring directly. So we have to have quantification systems, and they have to be based on our models and data, and we've got to have decision support systems. And so my group has been working over a number of years on a decision support system called Comet Farm, which is really a platform for looking at conservation and best management practice scenario analysis for, you know, primarily for greenhouse gas inventories and mitigation at the farm or ranch scale. And we've also then got a companion tool with that, which is called the Comet Planner. And recently in California, there's a new policy initiative there called the Healthy Soils Initiative. And basically what that is they're trying to encourage farmers to do more greenhouse gas friendly processes or practices that also increase soil health, and they're going to pay for it in part from their compliance program for greenhouse gas reductions in the state. But they want it to be, they don't want this to be part of their compliance program, so like an offset project, which they have a few of, for example, with rice methane, but rather that they want to have things that are notionally positive, and they want to know roughly what the benefits are in terms of soil improvements and greenhouse gases, but not necessarily at the same level that you would have for something like an offset program. So one of the tools that they have decided to use is actually something that is called the Comet Farm Tool, which I now am going to kind of go through and talk a little bit about some of the work that we're doing in California and what that looks like. So first, the kind of the overview of the background of this. So we've been working on trying to develop a platform that integrates really data and user inputs and models. And then about 3 years ago, USDA produced this blue book, this entity scale inventory guidelines there, EVE et al. 2014. And in that, it's really goes through and defines the methodologies for doing entity scale greenhouse gas inventories that really look at all sectors. So things like livestock emissions, energy, and of course there's lots of soil related greenhouse gas emissions. And in that, those methodologies include both empirical models as well as the DACENT, which is a process based model that Peter had mentioned here in his talk. So basically the idea is that the Comet Farm system now is an embodiment of the methodologies that are in this blue book, this USDA guidelines. And so how the system looks like a little bit on the left-hand side, just again, I guess I want to just make the point that it's really a platform. So it's got a web interface and user inputs that deal with the full suite of greenhouse gas sources, but then it's got sort of the models and really a suite of models as well as spatial data that's in the back end of this, and all designed to to produce, you know, the reports out to the user. And the idea is that even though this is a really quite a complex system, it's still designed in theory to be used by farmers. So you should, as long as you have an internet connection and you know how you manage your system, you can go online, you can do this, you know, yourself. And that's the theory. But it turns out that there's also a lot of interest for something simpler. And I guess I would say that people, you know, you talk to people about, you know, gee, you want to use a decision support system, and one of the things they'll say is, I want a three-click tool. So I just want to click three times and get the answer, right? And that, you know, that makes it challenging when you're trying to do something as complex as greenhouse gas inventories, you know. And so for a long time, I don't know, I sort of resisted that and just saying, well, you can't really do it. It's not meaningful. But our, you know, one of the things that we've worked on is this Comet Planner tool, which is kind of your three-click tool. And how it really works, sort of to contrast this, the Comet Farm, is at the entity scale, at your field scale, you define what your management scenarios are now and how you're now going to change those in a sort of a baseline and a future scenario. And so you have to define both at the field scale. The idea with the Comet Planner instead is to say, we're going to assume the baseline. We're going to estimate the baseline independent of an individual farm or field. And then we're going to kind of aggregate the options that you can do in terms of soil management practices to align with NRCS's defined conservation practices. So once you do that, then you've made some assumptions and definitions that kind of allow you to simplify. Just to give you a little bit of an idea, so if you want to go into Comet Farm and you do you know, all this detailed stuff, then you know, you can go in and there's these back end databases, and you know like some of the other things we've seen, you can go in and you outline your fields and you get your soil types up there and Sergo and all this kind of stuff, and then you specify your management. You know, this takes a little while to go through and put in your, you know, your tillage and your crop rotation and your planting dates and all this stuff. We've kind of done we've made it more fun now. There's a kind of a drag and drop menu, so you can grab icons and do that. It's a lot easier, but it's still a little bit time consuming. Now, in terms of outputs, there's a lot of things. We generate tables, graphs. You can download things into spreadsheets, and now we have an applications program interface, so you can also get we'll be able to get outputs out to feed into other kinds of models. Okay, so back to California. So one of the things that, you know, we've built over the years, the Comet Farm tool, hasn't really been California-centric, and now there's a lot of interest in California, and they say, well, gee, you know, you need to do some of the crops that we can do here. So, and they have a lot of specialty crops, and here's kind of a list and some pictures of them. And fortunately, we got some support from the California Department of Food and Ag to work on a project for a couple of years. It's just finished up now. So one of the things that was nice about that, so if you go to Australia and you talk to a farmer, you know, he's going to pick a shovel at and kind of wave it at you threateningly. And when you go out to California, though, and you meet with farmers, they're nice, you know, they'll give you kind of hugs and feel good kind of things, right? They like scientists, you know, talk about greenhouse gases. Hey, you know, we care about N2O. It's like, so it's nice. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go. Mark and Amy down in the lower seat, they got to go out there and go on lots of tours and talk to folks there and have a lot of fun. And so we then looked at not only, you know, trying to represent these systems that are, you know, that are kind of special to California, is there's a lot of information you obviously need here in terms of planting dates and tillage and how they manage their fertilizer and et cetera. And they also have some novel, you know, irrigation systems and other kinds of practices that go with some of their, you know, plastic mulches and things like that, which are, you know, occur elsewhere in the U.S., but they're not your standard kind of field crop management. So those are things that we've been working on then trying to represent better. So once you've got information on the practices and you've decided your specialty crops, then you've got to try to integrate this into the Comet Farm system, and one of the places there is this descent model that Peter had talked about, and so you've got to try to use whatever field data is available to try to parameterize descent to grow an almond tree or strawberries or something like this. So the challenge here, though, is okay, what kind of data do you have? There's tons and tons of data on almond production, okay, but what does that have to do with greenhouse gases? Well, you know, not that much, but what you've got to start with in doing a system representation, and I think this was pointed out earlier, is, you know, the plant is a huge impact on the plant is where the carbon inputs go to feed soil carbon. The plant is where the nitrogen balance goes to how much nitrogen is left over for leaching or denitrification or N2O emissions. So that where you can start with is how well can I model the, you know, the growth, the dry matter allocation, the, you know, the nitrogen balance of these different crops. And so there is some data available on it, but it's, you know, it's a little bit sparse. So we, you know, we've, and this is work that Shaw and in particular and Kerry did a lot of work on, and here's an example. Now they, Shaw has a paper in review now that has a lot of the results from all the work that's been done, and so I'm not going to show a lot of that. It's not been you know, accepted yet, but just an example. So you see, for example, here's an, you know, we once we had developed the parameterizations for based on field sites, we went out and tried to collect regional data on almond yields, for example, within the Central Valley. And so we took a random set of sites and ran the models and then compared those to those more regional aggregate data that we have. And you can see an example here where, you know, at a certain, you know, over a certain scale, the Descent model surprisingly is able to simulate almond fruit yields, you know, relatively well, but, you know, breaks down at some of these higher ones, but without dwelling a whole lot on that. We also, in developing this Comet Farm system, is uncertainty is important. So we're following the uncertainty methods that are in the Blue Book, and this really involves a Monte Carlo simulation, and we essentially go through that that process, and we've got a developmental version of Comet Farm that's going to be going up the end of this year that is going to include the uncertainty as well as the specialty crop stuff. Okay, so now I'm going to finish up with, so we've got Comet Farm now. It's set up so we can at least represent a little bit better these California systems, but again, they want a three-click tool. So how do we do that? How do we, and this is where Comet Planner comes in. And Comet Planner now is designed to sort of work at a regional, think an MLRA scale, and to again incorporate, we wanted to incorporate these methodologies in as much of the science as we understand of greenhouse gas emissions and carbon change, but in a pretty aggregate and simple way. So as I mentioned before, it's to really represent these according to these USDA conservation standards in which you define a baseline, and then you, for a particular region, you define what does that particular conservation standard actually mean. So how do you get how do we then generate this to get it into this simpler tool? So we start off with the spatial data on California. We're going to represent again outputs at this MLRA scale. So you see these different colors that represent different MLRAs within California, do the random pant sample, use that to construct the baseline measurements from the crop data layer, remote sensing time series. So then you've defined your cropping systems, you marry that up with information from ERS and ARM surveys, and a lot of that is kind of county aggregate stuff, and so you essentially build up then a sample of the landscape where you actually can represent the baseline scenario, and then you can impose your definitions of the USDA conservation standards, and then basically do a big simulation using this API system on Comet Farm, and then you come out with these aggregate for each particular. So here's an example of a particular no-till or strip tillage is a single out of about 50 or 60 of these conservation practices. So you get a prediction then by these individual MLRAs for soil carbon and nitrous oxide emissions that are generated from this kind of big aggregate analysis. So then the user has a tool, this Comet Planner tool, and basically they just have to go in and they say, here's my county in California, here's my practice. We also have it in Spanish, so you don't have to just speak English. You go in and you select your intervention, you get basically an estimate, and that's the estimate you report to the California Department of Ag overseeing the Healthy Soils Initiative. So, you know, you're essentially going from a pretty complex system but trying to boil it down into something that's usable in this kind of a policy framework. So then finally, I guess what I would just say to wrap this up is, you know, there's still a lot of work for us to do still in California. There's additional specialty crops that we're not representing now. There's a need to probably better define with local experts what these conservation practices actually look like at the individual regional scale. And there's also interest, you know, again, a lot of what Comet Farm is doing now is modeling things like soil carbon or nitrous oxide emissions. But there's interest in what about soil aggregation? What about, you know, these more soil quality attributes? So we're trying to do work to do there. And then finally, I guess I would say that there are, you know, particularly for these systems, you know, we've got a lot of information on corn, soybean, and wheat. We've got soil carbon, and we've got production. We've got, you know, Bruno can get, 50,000 farmers data downloaded and stuff. But when it comes to looking at these specialty crops, we have very little data on them. So more data. We really need that. It's, you know, they're not necessarily important at the global scale, but they're really important locally, and they're really high-value crops, and the people there care about it. And so you've got to, you've got to make your best attempt to meet them where they are. So thanks. Sorry if I went a couple minutes over time, but I guess I'll buy Bruno a beer and he'll forgive me. No, actually, I'm just right on time.
Thank you, Keith. So, like everybody else, I'll give time for priority to ask Keith questions, but we do have a time set for discussion until we close the session. So, any specific questions to Keith, and then hopefully we'll continue. Yes, please.
Yeah, that's a good question. So the answer is kind of yes and no. So there is a relatively recent version of Descent that simulates methane emission as well as methane oxidation. That has been used. There's some papers out. It's also been used as part of the national inventory work that Steve Ogle is doing, looking at least for U.S. rice. So Descent has capabilities to simulate methane emissions. In Comet Farm, it's a little bit different because Comet Farm implements the methodology that was determined by the expert working groups that produced this blue book. And at the time, what that expert group wanted to recommend was really an empirically based method, a little bit more like an IPCC kind of a tier two method. That's what is currently implemented in Comet Farm. Now, again, Comet Farm is a platform. We're now integrating the APEX model into it. We could, maybe get Bruno to put Salus in the back end of it. That's what's nice about it, you know, is it can do that. And So right now, you know, the methane is sort of turned off in Dayton. It's being run in the system, but it's not being used. But and I think this is, but it's a good question that relates to a more of a, I think a longer term issue is, I think we're finding more and more, and N2O is probably the best example, is we there's a lot of uncertainties with our process-based models, and so there's kind of a reluctance, and people, particularly when you're working in sort of in the policy space, there's a lot of sort of uneasiness about process-based models because they're complex. They, you know, does anybody really understand them? But I think we're getting to the point where we can't give our best estimates now are going to be based on process-based models. We've done a lot of work trying to get good general estimates of N2O emissions, for example, with empirical models. The same thing with methane, and they're not as good as our, you know, as our process-based models. I think, you know, what Peter talked about, we need to improve, and he showed some really promising avenues to improving the process-based models. But so on the one hand, it's like we're almost, in some ways, for some of this stuff, we're kind of working with one hand tied behind our back because, you know, there's not the level of trust maybe out in the policy community for process-based models, like go talk to Air Resources Board in California. But I guess I'm optimistic because I think as we push our science forward a little bit more in the pretty near future, we'll have the benefit of that science to inform policy. And maybe ultimately, you know, maybe the answer is that, you know, what we saw on the ensemble modeling, you know, if we can, that's a lot of data crunching, but boy, if we can have, you know, the ensemble models informing, you know, complex decision support systems, but ones that are engineered to be simple enough for high school students or farmers or ranchers, if they're not going to wave the shovel at you, they can use, you know, Comet Farm. Then I think that's a, you know, there's a lot of potential down the road. It's kind of a rant, sorry.